Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
a rapid recovery of oil production looks unlikely after the attack in Saudi Arabia.
Geopolitical tensions and uncertainty continue to weigh on global equities.
WeWork signals a significant delay to its IPO plans.
And auto workers enter day two of their strike against GM.
Iran's supreme leader says there will be no talks with the U.S. at any level, plus an ex-Trump campaign manager today is scheduled before the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Jets are 0-2. They lost the Monday night game to Cleveland. The Giants hinted they might bench Eli Manning. The Mets lost at Colorado.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures and European stocks struggling for direction this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down about 3 points. Dow futures down 29. NASDAQ futures down 13. The DAX in Germany's down about 0.2%. The CAC in Paris is little change. FTSE 100 up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. COMEX Gold is down 0.4% or $6.20 at 15.05.40 an ounce. The euro, 1.1015 against the dollar. The yen at 108.17. Nathan.
Hey, Karen. We begin in the Middle East this morning, where Saudi Aramco is growing less optimistic of a rapid recovery in oil production after the weekend's attack. We get the very latest now from Bloomberg's Riyad Hamadi.
There might be some initial recovery there, or at least of some of the lost production. But to recover all of it, it looks like may take weeks, if not months, to fix completely. Although, again, we don't really have official word. And I think the Saudis are currently assessing the damage to know more definitively where that takes us.
Now, initial reports had said crude could begin flowing again within days. Now sources tell us Saudi Aramco is notifying customers some crude deliveries for early October will be delayed to later in the month. More uncertainty still isn't priced into oil markets, according to Sarah Emerson at ESAI Energy.
There was this expectation the Saudi energy ministry would give an update on Tuesday, and we have heard nothing. So I think the market is still sort of absorbing this. I would not be at all surprised to see prices go up from $68 Brent.
And right now, Brent crude is trading at $69.01 barrel. That's little changed, up about a penny, while West Texas Intermediate is down 0.6%, down 38 cents at $62.52.
In Asia, it was another down day for stocks as investors gauge implications from the strike in Saudi Arabia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. China's yuan dropped and Chinese and Hong Kong equities slid in the wake of the country's central bank refraining from lowering one of its interest rates. However, Japan's topics rose as energy stocks played catch-up to Monday's gains as Japanese traders returned from the three-day weekend. Here in Singapore, exports contracted for a sixth straight month in August from a year earlier, weighed down by the eighth double-digit retreat in electronic shipments in 9 months. However, the 8.9% drop in non-oil exports was better than expected thanks to demand from China, the only market to buy more from the city-state last month. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thanks. In the UK today, Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Brexit strategy is on trial at Britain's highest court. For the very latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Roger Hearing in London. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Today sees the beginning of one of the most important cases ever to come before the UK's Supreme Court. The justices are being asked to rule on appeals from two different legal systems. One case in which English judges decided they didn't have the right to rule on Boris Johnson's suspension of Parliament, and one in which Scotland's judges decided they did and that his action was unlawful. The Supreme Court's judgment could define the limits of political and judicial power in the UK, and perhaps the outcome of Brexit too. The stakes couldn't be higher. Live in London, I'm Roger Hearing, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Roger, thank you. Turning to corporate news now, WeWork is signaling a delay to its IPO. The company is now targeting a listing by the end of the year as concerns mount over valuation and business prospects. Santosh Rao is head of research at Manhattan Venture Partners.
I think it should never have been priced at $47 billion. I think just in January of 2019, SoftBank bought back shares of employees at $20 billion. So it's in the $20 to $25 billion. It can be justified, provided they clear out the corporate governance issues and give more clarity in terms of their financials.
WeWork had originally planned to begin its pitch to investors as soon as this week.
The United Auto Workers Union's entering day two of its strike against General Motors, and its top negotiator says the sides remain far apart. We get more from Bloomberg's David Welch in Detroit.
Sticking points here for what's going to happen with temporary workers. About 7% of GM's workforce is temporary workers. The union wants to see less of it. They want to see a path to permanent employment for those people. They're far apart on that issue. And then they have these entry-level wages for workers, which are less than $20 an hour. The top workers make $30 an hour. The union wants a much shorter path to get to that top wage. So just not a lot of wiggle room, and someone's going to have to compromise to get a deal.
Shares of GM fell 4% yesterday. The union's vice president says just 2% of 1,000 outstanding proposals have been settled.
In Luxembourg today, Apple's $14 billion battle with the EU heads to the bloc's second highest court. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo is there and brings us the very latest.
It's the high-stakes legal battle between the European Commission, the Irish government, and American tech giant Apple. The two of them have appealed a decision by the European Commission, which forced Apple to pay back 13 billion euros in overdue tax. The verdict could have serious implications for the way American multinationals operate in Europe. And it could embolden the European Commission's tough approach when it comes to American tech. In Luxembourg, Maria Tadeo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Hi, Maria, thanks. And as big tech finds itself under pressure from regulators around the world, Bill Gates says breaking up these companies is not the answer. The former Microsoft CEO spoke with Bloomberg's Eric Schatzker in Seattle.
If there's a way the company's behaving that you want to get rid of, then, you know, you should just say, okay, that's a banned behavior.
Stop
just
doing
splitting
that.
The company in two and having two people doing the bad thing, you know, that doesn't seem like a solution.
Microsoft is no stranger to regulatory scrutiny, but currently it finds itself as one of the only big tech companies not under the microscope. NASDAQ futures down 8 points right now, Dow futures down 15, and S&P futures down a point. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Here's Michael Barr with more on what's happening around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. It may be the season of diplomacy in New York, but U.S. and Iranian leaders only seem to be talking at each other, not to each other. Bloomberg's Bob Moon in New York reports.
Middle East tensions are rising just as world leaders prepare to gather for the 74th session of the United Nations General Assembly, and as U.S. Senate leader Mitch McConnell calls for the world to respond to a, quote, reckless attack.
I hope our international partners will join us in imposing consequences on Tehran.
The big U.N. meetings aren't set to begin until next week, but Iran is now ruling out any chance that its leader might meet with President Trump then, declaring that stopping all sanctions is an indispensable precondition for constructive diplomacy. Trump, in turn, ruled that out as he spoke to reporters.
These sanctions are not going to be taken off.
Trump said he would be talking to the Saudis about the situation. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump was on the campaign trail last night in New Mexico. The president reacted to the New York Times report on Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, leading to new calls for his impeachment on Capitol Hill.
I call for the resignation of everybody at the New York Times involved in the Kavanaugh smear story.
The president, speaking in Rio Rancho, says every major Democrat wants to abolish all production of oil and natural gas. Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren spoke before an estimated crowd of about 20,000 people in New York City's Washington Square Park. Warren called for big structural change.
There's a lot at stake in this election. And I know people are scared. But we can't choose a candidate we don't believe in just because we're too scared to do anything else.
Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee are preparing to hold their first official hearing in what they are calling an impeachment investigation. President Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, is scheduled to appear today to discuss the special counsel's report on Russia election interference. President Trump said his administration will enter into an initial trade accord over tariffs with Japan in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, Tokyo warned any final deal must include assurances that Washington won't slap new tariffs on $50 billion of Japanese auto exports. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Jets knew it'd be hard enough to win last night without starting quarterback Sam Darnold. He's got mono, may miss a couple of months. But then the backup QB, Trevor Siemian, took a late hit from Myles Garrett. He limped off with an injured ankle, so the third stringer, Luke Falk, had to come in, make his NFL debut. No contest against a desperate Cleveland team, picked to win the division, but who lost its opener by 30. The Browns beat the Jets by 20, 23-3. Odell Beckham back at MetLife reminded Giants fans of what he can do, had one of his patented one-handed catches in the first half, had an 89-yard touchdown, only scored the second. Jets are 0-2. Their coach is Adam Gase.
We got to get better at what we're doing. We can play so much better than this, and the details of what's going on in all three phases can get a lot better, and it's going to have to. I mean, we got a long ways to go. We got a lot of practice. We got a lot of games. It's just going back to what we started doing in the spring and make sure we're executing that way.
Need to get better, but Sunday they have to play at New England. Giants also 0-2, and Coach Pat Shurmur asked point blank yesterday, will Eli Manning be his starting QB Sunday at Tampa Bay?
Been our starter to this point, and I don't want to talk about anything else moving forward from that standpoint. Not ready to discuss that. I understand that.
So they're at least considering making the move that was always a matter of not if, but when, replacing the 38-year-old Manning with the rookie Daniel Jones. The answer should come tomorrow. Mets playoff hopes, which seemed possible just a week ago, not so much now. After that sweep of Arizona, they've lost 3 of 4, had a 4-1 lead at Colorado, then lost 9-4. Steven Matz gave it all away in the fourth inning. The two teams the Mets are chasing for the wild card, the Cubs and Brewers both won. The Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. You could call this a goal for hockey fans. There will be NHL action for the next three seasons without the threat of a work stoppage. The Players Association says it will not opt out of the current collective bargaining agreement. Combined with the owner's decision earlier this month not to trigger their opt-out clause, the current CBA remains in effect until 2022, and the sides will continue working on an extension as the players continue to skate. Futures pointed lower. This is Bloomberg. Sports is brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are drifting along with U.S. stock index futures while treasuries continue higher as investors weigh the fallout from a drone attack on one of the world's biggest oil facilities and the record surge in crude prices that followed. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are little change. Dow futures down 5. NASDAQ futures down 3. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. 10-year treasury up 6/32nds, yield 1.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 62 cents at $62.27 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.4% or $6.30 at $15.05.20 an ounce. The euro, 1.1010 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.2406. And the yen is at 108.19. And today we're watching for a report on industrial production as well as one on capacity utilization out at 9:15 Wall Street time. And we're watching for earnings from FedEx today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The Islamic Republic's supreme leader says Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level, neither in New York or anywhere else. On Iranian state TV, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says sometimes they say negotiations without any precondition and sometimes with 12 conditions. The remarks are apparently meant to end all speculation about a U.S.-Iran meeting at the U.N. later this month in New York. Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee are preparing to hold their first official hearing in what they are calling an impeachment investigation. Ex-Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski is scheduled to appear. In the NFL, the Jets lost to the Browns last night 23-3. In baseball, the Mets lost along with the A's, Orioles, and Nationals. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Sarah House joins us now, senior economist at Wells Fargo Securities. Sarah, good morning. I want to begin with the latest developments following the weekend attack in Saudi Arabia. We're hearing that Aramco is telling some of its customers that deliveries for next month could be delayed for days, if not weeks, into late October. Are we facing a prolonged oil disruption here?
Well, I think it's looking like that. But in terms of the overall extent of this disruption, you know, I'd still say it's rather small. And really what this means for the U.S. economy and broader economy is really how much higher prices are and how long that increase is sustained. So right now we're looking at the increases only adding maybe a tenth, maybe two-tenths to overall inflation here in the U.S., not terribly devastating considering that inflation right now is still running under 2%.
So if you're not expecting a even further firming of inflation, what does that mean as the Federal Reserve is expected to at least lower rates a quarter percent tomorrow?
Well, I think this does add to the risks to the outlook. So, you know, trade uncertainty has certainly been at the forefront, given that it's been a more immediate risk. But this really does bring some of those geopolitical concerns back into the fold, and I think overall supports the Fed's risk management approach they've taken to policy. So we're looking for another cut tomorrow and then for guidance to signal that the Fed's going to be probably open to more easing later this year.
Moving away from the data dependence message that Chairman Powell had been putting out for the last few months?
I think we've already seen that shift away from the data dependence as they have focused on, again, this risk management approach. But I think even then, though, the data has signaled some deterioration, which supports this more dovish tone. You know, we have seen financial conditions tighten since the Fed last met in July. We've seen CapEx continue to deteriorate, including capital spending plans for manufacturers. And, of course, we did see slower hiring in August as well.
When you have the headwind potentially of an oil disruption, even if it is a modest disruption for the U.S., does that raise recession risk? The bond markets had been flagging some concern about that just a few weeks ago.
On the margin, but I think what we're seeing right now, it's still overall very small. So, you know, if you think of roughly the 10 or 15% move we've seen since the attacks, it's still fairly small when we look at the grand scheme of oil price moves. So remember in 2018, at one point, we were up roughly 60%. Still didn't hear a lot about that disruption in terms of what it meant to the U.S. economy. And heading into this period, prices were down about 20%. So in some ways, there's a little bit of room to give there, I think, before the level of oil prices really becomes a challenge for the overall economy.
So are you still thinking then that the uncertainty surrounding trade, the U.S.-China dispute, is the bigger headwind for the U.S. Outlook than this weekend attack?
I certainly think so. So we've seen some conciliatory gestures over the past couple weeks, but that comes after what was, in my view, a major escalation in August, where we saw the effective costs of the trade war really set to double over a single month. And so we look at where we are in terms of the trade headwinds, they still remain pretty significant. And so we see weakness in capital spending going forward over the next couple quarters, likely seeing outright declines in equipment spending. And so that's going to be dragging down GDP growth to where we're expecting growth of somewhere only around 1.5% over the next couple quarters.
About 30 seconds or so left here. Is there a possibility of some breakthrough on the U.S.-China trade story, given some of the conciliatory moves we've seen over the last few days?
Well, I think at least we're moving the right direction in terms of no longer escalating and to some extent even some signs of de-escalating. But I think given the many ways the list of grievances and how entrenched this has become, we're probably still some ways off from a full resolution.
Sarah House, senior economist, Wells Fargo Securities. Again, thanks for being with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak this morning. Pointing to modest losses, very slight losses, really, in terms of where we could see the market open for equities this morning. S&P futures are little changed right now, down just a half point. Dow futures are down 12 points. NASDAQ futures down 5.5. West Texas Intermediate crude oil is down 0.8%, down 54 cents, 62.36 a barrel. Brent crude's at 68.74. That's a drop of 0.4% on the session. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on this Tuesday morning. And Daybreak is brought to you by the new Range Rover Evoque, designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for the new Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We are seeing oil stabilize this morning after yesterday's nearly 15% rally. Still, there are concerns about how long it'll take to restore output. Sources tell us Saudi Aramco is notifying customers some crude deliveries for early October will be delayed to later in the month. We get more from Bloomberg's Will Kennedy.
What's clear is that the market has undergone a big shift, that it needs to be higher because 5.7 million barrels are out. We don't know how much of that is coming back anytime soon. It appears from what we understand, the plant is severely damaged and it may take a long time to bring it back. So the market has to adjust to life without that output.
And checking oil now, NYMEX crude oil is down 0.9% or 59 cents at $62.30 a barrel. Brent is down 0.5% at $68.65.
The pound is weakening as Boris Johnson prepares to defend his Brexit strategy. The prime minister's lawyer heads to the UK's highest court today.
WeWork has signaled it's putting off its troubled IPO. The office rentals startup says it now expects to complete the share listing by the end of the year.
AB InBev's back on track with the planned IPO of its Asian unit, but it's been scaled back. Bloomberg News has learned the brewer is set to raise up to about $4.9 billion. That's roughly half the earlier target.
On the earnings front, we get results from FedEx today, and here with a preview, Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Forecasts are for the company to post an adjusted profit of $3.16 a share on revenue topping $17 billion. Bloomberg Intelligence says FedEx will have much to discuss in its earnings call. Investors will want updates on the risk from the trade war with China, the pivot away from Amazon.com, and the integration of TNT. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thanks. General Motors and striking United Auto Workers remain far apart in their talks to resolve a strike. That's according to the union's top negotiator. The vice president of the union says just 2% of 1,000 outstanding proposals have been settled.
And Thomas Cook Group has filed for Chapter 11 court protection in the U.S. It's part of a broader debt restructuring for the British travel agent. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are little changed. Dow futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down about 7. The DAX in Germany is down almost 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 0.8 seconds, yield 1.81%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.74%. The euro is at 1.1012 against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to get more on what's happening around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level, neither in New York or anywhere else. That's according to the Islamic Republic Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. President Donald Trump has not ruled out a possible meeting with Iran's President Hassan Rouhani when both are in New York this month for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Meanwhile, President Trump says it looks as if Iran was behind the bombings of the Saudi Arabian oil facilities. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The president says it's not definitive, but that the U.S. is speaking with all the players in the region and says his administration has pretty clear evidence.
Well, it's looking that way. We'll have some pretty good, we're having some very strong studies done, but it's certainly looking that way at this moment.
He says he doesn't want war, but...
talking to a lot of different folks, and we're figuring out what they think. But I will tell you, that was a very large attack, and it could be met with an attack many, many times larger very easily by our country.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says it was Yemen with cause. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The White House is seeking to limit what former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski can tell a House panel pursuing an impeachment inquiry. Lewandowski is scheduled to testify today before the House Judiciary Committee. There is another attempt to get a look at the president's tax returns. According to a person familiar with the matter, prosecutors in New York have subpoenaed 8 years of President Trump's tax returns from Mazars USA, the longtime accounting firm to Trump and the Trump Organization, as part of its investigation into hush money payments. Rallying voters in Democratic-leaning states, President Trump traveled to New Mexico last night. The president in Rio Rancho says Hispanics are in favor of strong border security.
Hispanic Americans, they understand they don't want criminals coming across the border. They don't want people taking their jobs. They want to have that security, and they want the wall. They want the wall.
Voters in Israel are heading to the polls today. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces a challenge from his former military chief, Benny Gantz. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Jets and Giants play each other in November, so one of the New York teams is going to get at least one win, but both teams' prospects look bleak right now. The Jets had hopes of being competitive, but two of their best defensive players are injured, and their top two quarterbacks are out. Sam Darnold has mono. Trevor Siemian hurt his ankle last night. He's headed for an MRI. They had to use third stringer Luke Falk. They couldn't get anything going offensively against the Browns. And speaking of the Giants, their old friend was back in Jersey.
First and 10, fakes the handoff. He throws to Odell. Beckham Jr. catches in the 25-foot race to the 30. On the hash mark, the 40. Foot race to the 50. From the 40. On the numbers, the 30. Breaks the tackle, 20. Down the near sideline, 10. 5, touchdown. Odell Beckham Jr., a quick hitter. 89-yard touchdown pass. Baker Mayfield to Odell Beckham Jr. in his return to MetLife Stadium.
Westwood won the call. Beckham had a one-handed catch in the first half. Browns beat the Jets 23-3, and on Sunday, the Jets visit New England. Defending Super Bowl champs are 2-0 by a combined 76-3. Giants have a winnable game Sunday at Tampa Bay, but who will be the starting quarterback? Eli Manning has started all but one Giant game since 2004, asked if he expects to get benched for rookie Daniel Jones.
We're 0-2, and they're, you know, you're looking for answers. So, I get it. You know, when you draft a guy early, and you're not winning games. These are going to come up. So, I just got to keep working and do whatever my job is.
Coach Pat Shurmur would not confirm that Eli will start Sunday. Speaking of old QBs in New Orleans, Drew Brees having surgery on his thumb, he'll miss 6 weeks. In Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger, surgery on his elbow. His season is over. And so might be the Mets. Playoff hopes fading fast. They lost at Colorado 9-4. Had a 4-1 lead, and then the Rockies put up 6 in the fourth against Steven Matz. Mets are 5 games out, only 12 games to go. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on how cancer-causing elements have ended up in Americans' blood pressure pills. Also in this week's issue, why no one is benefiting from the U.S.-China trade war. Peter Coy wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
It's almost as if the U.S. and China seem to be intent on dividing the world into two separate spheres, which is just like really globalization in reverse.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Curry. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority plans to spend $55 billion over the next 5 years to modernize its two commuter rail lines, bridges, and tunnels. and the subway and bus systems. A lot of that money will be used to modernize antiquated signals. New Jersey Resources has named Steve Westhoven as president and CEO of NJR and its subsidiaries. That includes New Jersey Natural Gas, effective October 1st. The current CEO, Lawrence Downs, will retire at the end of September and continue to serve as chairman until January. Farmington, Connecticut-based Otis Elevator has hired a new finance chief as it gets ready to separate from United Technologies. Raul Guy comes from Harris Corporation, where he's been CFO since February of 2016. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that Boeing estimates China will spend almost $3 trillion on its planes and services in the next two decades.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. The head of the FAA will visit Boeing this week to assess the 737 MAX.
I'm Steve Podisk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Netflix landing Seinfeld in the video streaming wars.
I'm Roger Hearing, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio. We're reporting on Boris Johnson's battle over suspending Parliament in the Supreme Court.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting General Motors and the UAW are still far apart in their talks over a new contract.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're following, Facebook once again defending its planned cryptocurrency, Libra. The social network is rejecting fears it could replace sovereign currencies and threaten the role of central banks. Regulators all over the world have pushed back against Facebook's plans. One argument that the company shouldn't be trusted to handle sensitive financial information. S&P futures lower by 2 points. Dow futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 10 points. This is Bloomberg. The Tri-State Business Report was brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment, flatbeds for napping, and afternoon tea. Daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks, they're drifting to lower. U.S. stock index futures are now moving a little lower as well. Treasuries are continuing higher. Investors weighing the fallout from a drone attack on one of the world's biggest oil facilities and the record surge in crude prices that followed. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures, they're down 3 points. Dow futures down 36 and NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down about a quarter of a percent. It's deteriorating as well. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.5% on 96 cents at $61.93 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $4.70 at $15.06.70 an ounce. The euro 1.1020 against the dollar. The British pound 1.2397. And the yen is at 108.20. Today we are watching for our reports on industrial production and capacity utilization out at 9:15 Wall Street time. And we're looking for earnings from FedEx today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump is calling for the resignation of the editors in the New York Times story about accusations Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and sexual misconduct while in college. Kavanaugh is not commenting on this latest charge, but his defenders called it a political smear, and they point out that the Times article, adapted from a new book out this week, originally omitted a key fact, which editors later added, that the woman couldn't recall the incident. The Islamic Republic's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, says Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level. In the NFL, the Jets lost to the Browns last night, 23-3. In baseball, the Mets lost along with the A's, Orioles, and Nationals. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
And it is 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion. Columnist and oil strategist Julian Lee is back with us this morning from our London bureau, helping us break down the latest information we're getting from Saudi Aramco on just how long it could take for the oil giant to recover from the weekend drone strike. And it's looking, Julian, like it may take even longer than had initially been expected.
Yeah, I think this is one of the problems that we're really not getting much information from Saudi Aramco at the moment. They haven't issued the update that they initially said they would publish within 48 hours of the initial attack. We're now hearing that a senior source in Saudi Aramco has said that they could face a severe disruption measured in weeks or months. That's, you know, significantly more than the restoration of full production within days that they were initially hoping for. I don't think that comes as a huge surprise. I mean, I think it is very difficult to assess the scale of damage, you know, in the immediate aftermath of an attack. And I think that this facility, or both these facilities, are clearly very complex, interrelated sets of processes, and damage to one of them can have quite a significant knock-on effect. But this, I think, is starting to look at least longer than people had initially anticipated.
And not only is Aramco going to have to rebuild the facilities themselves, but there's also the question of how much more work is the company going to have to do to boost its security now, and what that could mean for price.
Yes, I do think that questions are undoubtedly going to be asked about security of the installations. I mean, this is, after all, the single highest profile target in the entire Middle East region. And some people are beginning to ask, how is it that expensive air defense systems didn't apparently detect an attack of this magnitude wherever it originated from? And I think that there is going to have to be a thorough look at the defense of this and other oil infrastructure in Saudi Arabia.
In the meantime, what is there to replace the supply that has been disrupted here? We're talking about 5% of Aramco's production.
Well, we're talking about 5% of world production. We're talking about 50% of Aramco's production. And this, I think, is one of the big worries that the industry faces at the moment. Saudi Arabia, as well as being one of the world's biggest producers, is also, or was also, the holder of almost all of the world's spare production capacity. That meant that it was a great buffer in the event of a disruption to somebody else's supply. But most of this spare capacity has to be processed at the Abqaiq plant, which is the one that's been damaged. And so most of this spare capacity that Saudi Arabia has is now itself unusable. There is a small amount that the country can bring into production from some of its offshore fields. There are relatively modest amounts of spare capacity in some other countries, notably Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Russia, who have all been cutting production over the last 2.5 years. There are stockpiles of oil, both commercial stockpiles, and it was only a week ago that OPEC was bemoaning the fact that commercial stockpiles were still too high. So there are stockpiles that will be run down. There are also the strategic stocks, both the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the United States and others elsewhere in the world.
Bloomberg Opinion columnist, oil strategist Julian Lee, thanks again for being with us here. And you can read more of this from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
More than 90 members of Congress say a growing number of drug shortages means the FDA should release the information a task force collected to ensure patients have access to their medication. Bankrupt Gymboree Group has won court approval of its $3.6 million settlement with its former employees. A group of workers sued after the company fired them without the required 60 days advance notice. And Uber Technologies and drivers who challenged their classification as independent contractors won final approval of a $20 million settlement from the Northern District of California.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal development we're watching. Actress Felicity Huffman sentenced to 14 days in federal prison after paying to rig her daughter's SAT scores. She's the first parent to be charged in the nation's largest college admissions scandal. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with former federal prosecutor Robert Mintz, who's head of the white-collar practice at McCarter & English.
The government was only asking for 1 month in jail here. So the defense was asking for probation. The judge ultimately essentially split the difference by giving her 2 weeks in jail. So it really was kind of a compromise sentence. But for somebody in Felicity Huffman's position, the idea of spending time in jail is something that I think sends a very strong message. And it's also important to remember that, as I said earlier, Felicity Huffman only paid a $15,000 payment. So to the extent the judge considers the amount of bribes as a factor, hers is on the low end. She also was one of the first people to come in to plead guilty, to accept responsibility. So this really is now the floor that other defendants are looking at who have entered guilty pleas here. It's likely there will be jail time that's handed out by this judge as to all the other defendants.
Let's talk now about the 19 parents who chose not to seek a plea deal. They were indicted on money laundering charges. They're fighting it. Indications are that some of them are going to try to basically indict the system, saying there isn't any difference between what they did and making a huge donation to a school to get your kid in. Do you think that defense will work?
Well, that is exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to put the entire college admissions process on trial. And the judge has already made a couple of comments that indicated that she believes that the system is somewhat broken. She made a comment at one point saying outrage is a system that is so distorted by money and privilege in the first place. That's the outrage here. And she acknowledged that there are cracks in the system. So she knows the system has some problems, but I don't think she's going to allow the defense lawyers to make this trial about the college admissions system. And ultimately, the second prong of the defense here is going to be to attack the credibility of Rick Singer, the admitted mastermind of this whole process, the fraudster who pleaded guilty, who was the architect of all of this. His credibility will be central to the prosecution's case and to the defense case, because the government has to show that these parents knew that this money was not simply a contribution to the university, but in fact was money that was funneled to athletic coaches as bribes or as payment for people to take tests on behalf of their children. That's what this case is ultimately about, and that's why the credibility of Rick Singer, the cooperating witness, is so central.
And that's former federal prosecutor Robert Mintz speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg Radio.